Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Dr. Michael Greger. Dr. Greger is author of the New York Times bestseller, How Not to Die, Discover the Foods Scientifically Proven to Prevent and Reverse Disease. Dr. Greger is founder of the nonprofit NutritionFacts.org and a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. His research has been published in many peer-reviewed scientific journals, including the American Journal of Preventive Medicine and the International Journal of Food, Safety, Nutrition, and Public Health. Dr. Greger is a graduate of the Cornell University School of Agriculture and the Tufts University School of Medicine. He produces daily video blogs and reports that are reaching millions of people with no-nonsense, cutting-edge nutritional insights. So now, Dr. Greger, we are so honored and grateful to have this time with you. And now for this interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, and thank you, Michael, for being with us.
I'm honored to be here as usual. My favorite gig of the year.
Well, it's our favorite to have you. You know, I want to start right in. In America, sickness sells. It's a big part of our economy. Disease management alone is responsible for about 20% of our economy. Now, a recent study in the Journal of the American Medical Association found that 94% of the $3.2 trillion that we spend on what we call healthcare in this country is actually spent on managing diseases, most of which are preventable with a healthy lifestyle and diet. So, Michael, does this mean that the best healthcare we have really is the food we choose to put into our mouths?
Absolutely, because we're talking about lifestyle diseases, so about 8% of chronic disease. Most of the diseases we see in primary care, these are lifestyle diseases. And so unless you treat the cause, right, then we have no hope of actually stopping and reversing these diseases. Now, you know, with pills and procedures, we can try to mediate some of the ravages of the disease. So, for example, if you have high blood pressure, you can take high blood pressure pills to try to force your blood pressure down and to help save, you know, some of the sensitive tissues in your bodies, like your eyes and your kidneys, which can't stand all those high pressures. But because you're not treating the actual cause of the disease, right, the clogged, crippled, inflamed arteries, well, then you have to take these drugs for the rest of your life and actually don't do anything to stop or slow the progression of the disease. Now, if you absolutely refuse to make any change in your lifestyle, refuse to stop smoking, refuse to stop eating healthier, well, then these, you know, blood pressure pills can help, but better to treat the cause of the disease, remove the cause, have your body come back to health naturally, and then you don't have to take medication every day for the rest of your life and the ensuing costs and risks and lack of efficacy.
Well, high blood pressure is a very common disease in the country and in the world today. In this country, in the U.S., a third of adults have hypertension, and about 70% of adults 65 or older are taking the drugs you just mentioned to lower their blood pressure. Michael, if someone with high blood pressure adopts a whole foods, plant-strong diet, what can they realistically and reliably expect to experience?
Well, if they're on blood pressure drugs, what's critical is that they need to make these dietary changes in conjunction with their physicians, because their doctors will need to wean them off these drugs, in some cases very rapidly. You know, people, physicians, patients, they underestimate the power of diet and lifestyle to rapidly reverse disease, such that if people start eating healthy, and within days, their blood pressures start coming down naturally. If you don't wean people off these drugs, sometimes people are on multiple different classes of blood pressure medications. Well, look, you can't have normal blood pressure and be on blood pressure pills. You can drop your blood pressure too low. You can get faint and dizzy, fall over, hurt yourself. And so I mean, it's critical that you work with your physician to take you down these drugs. And so with, you don't need these drugs anymore. You can stop them altogether because, again, you're treating the cause of the disease. You know, the same thing with blood sugar. If you if you're a type 2 diabetic, you're on insulin injections, taking these oral hypoglycemic pills, you know, if you start eating healthy, if you start cleaning up your body and start clearing out that insulin resistance, and so your body starts working that much better that you don't need these drugs anymore, and you keep injecting the same amount of insulin, it can be dangerous. You can drop your blood sugars dangerously low. Your doctor have to keep taking those insulin down, 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 until finally we have to take you off all drugs altogether because you have normal blood sugars off any pills, and by definition, your type 2 diabetes has simply been cured. The same thing with high blood pressure. So ironically, the side effects of eating healthy can be not having to take drugs. But if you're on these drugs, again, you have to do it with supervision because you need to these drugs need to be weaned off as your body gets healthier because you're treating the underlying root cause, the diseases.
And you don't need the drugs anymore gradually and rapidly, it sounds.
In some cases, it can be really rapid, and so rapidly that people can run into real problems if all of a sudden they start eating healthy and their body improves quicker than you can get to your doctor. And so that's why, I mean, you really have to put some thought into it. Now, look, if you're healthy already, you're not on medications, look, you can eat as healthy as you want to prevent. If you're on some of these pills that have these these kind of dramatic effects, well, then, you know, look, you remove the cause, remove the disease. You can't just take these drugs willy-nilly.
You mentioned type 2 diabetes. This is a disease that's been called the Black Death of the 21st century because of its exponential spread around the world and its devastating health impacts. It used to be called, not that long ago, adult onset diabetes because it was unheard of in children. But we're sadly seeing it increasingly in kids today, which is why the name was changed. At current rates, the CDC predicts that 1 in 3 Americans will have this disease by mid-century. Now, you've written that type 2 diabetes is almost always preventable, is often treatable, and is even reversible through diet and lifestyle changes. Michael, that is a powerful, provocative, and if true, enormously life-enhancing reality. What's the evidence for it?
This evidence, what's sad, is this evidence has been around since the 1970s, since this pivotal paper published in 1979 by some pretty center researchers that took people, put them on this whole planned strong diet, put a group of diabetics randomized to either continue their regular diet or to go on this really healthy diet. And what they saw is that within 2 weeks, an average of 2 weeks, half of the diabetics, diabetics on insulin, type 2 diabetics on insulin, half the diabetics were able to get off all their insulin completely. Overall insulin use dropped 60%. Half were able to completely wean themselves off. And this is within 2 weeks. So we're talking people starting out, you know, 32 units of insulin a day, down to zero about 2 weeks later. Now, and this was what's really extraordinary about this is this was without even any weight loss. What they did is they forced people to eat so much food that they didn't lose any weight. They weighed them every day. They started to lose weight. They were made to eat more food because they wanted to isolate out the effect of the plant-based eating, not the weight loss. Any type of weight loss can help diabetes. So if you go, you don't change your diet at all, but you do you go to a gastric bypass surgery, right, bariatric surgery, and so you basically force yourself to eat less food because you have such a small stomach or rearranged internal anatomy, you can remarkably improve diabetes. But they didn't want, lots of things. You can lose weight, cocaine, chemotherapy. But the goal is not to fit into a skinnier casket. The goal is to, eat healthier in a way that prolongs one's life. But they wanted to isolate out the effects. Is it just a weight loss? Because before then, there were studies showing plant-based diets rapidly improve diabetes, in some case reverse diabetes. But the naysayers was like, oh, yeah, well, any kind of weight loss can do it. It wasn't plant-based eating per se. So this was the pivotal study showing even without any weight loss, their bodies just work so much better eating plants that they their bodies healed themselves, and again, very rapidly. And the, what are the side effects? Their cholesterol dropped like a rock, their total cholesterol to under 150 on average, making them essentially heart attack proof in addition to helping or curing their diabetes. I mean, so these are just absolutely extraordinary findings. And when did we learn about this? We learned about this, 40 years ago almost. So yet hundreds of thousands of people continue to die. Type 2 diabetes, the number one cause of adult onset blindness and amputations and kidney failure. Yet here it is. We have the cure. We've had it for many decades. Yet, unfortunately, the medical science has yet to kind of catch up, or medical practice has yet to catch up to the available science.
I'm thinking of a study of 89,000 Californians and diabetes. It found that flexitarians cut their risk of the disease by 28%, which is good news for those who eat meat maybe once a week rather than every day. Those who cut out all meat except fish saw even greater improvement. They cut their diabetes rates by 50%. And those who cut out all animal products dropped their diabetes rates by even more, by about 80%, compared with people who ate meat on a daily basis. So, Michael, are there nutritional differences between plant foods and animal foods that account for such remarkable improvements?
So we think is going on. There's a number of things. So there's both a number of protective things within plant foods, a number of deleterious things in animal foods that may be contributing to this remarkable effect. At the end of the day, it can be, well, look, it works, so who cares? But I'm always curious as to the mechanism. Probably the primary player in this is the buildup of saturated fat within our muscles, within our liver, that causes what's called insulin resistance, which is the underlying cause of prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And so by reducing our intake of saturated fat, we can pull that saturated fat out of our muscles, out of our vital organs, and the insulin that we do have will work that much better. Cutting down saturated fat, which is primarily meat and dairy, number one source in the American diet is chicken, then dairy products. And so by cutting out saturated fat, that could explain why we have this remarkable improvement in insulin sensitivity, improvement in prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. Though weight loss is also important, if you are obese, regardless of what you put in your mouth, you can have this what's called a spillover effect, where fat in the fat cells of particularly the adipose tissue, the fat around your internal organs, can spill over into your blood. So you have these high fat levels in your blood, which can then lodge in your muscles and other organs. And so it's almost as if you ate a poor diet. So a combination of eating healthy, eating a low saturated fat diet, which means eating a predominantly plant-based diet without junk foods, which can have a lot of saturated fat as well, making sure that you bring your weight down to normal.
When you spoke of the building up of fat in the liver leading to insulin resistance, I was thinking of how sugar also leads to the buildup of liver fat. And if you were looking for a food to combine sugar and saturated fat, you'd find ice cream. My father, famously, Irv Robbins founded and owned for many years Baskin-Robbins 3-in-1 Flavors, the what was then the world's largest ice cream company. And he developed very serious diabetes. The prognosis for him at the time was that he was looking at possible blindness, possibly the amputation of a foot, or even maybe his entire leg. He was taking insulin daily. But remarkably, he changed his diet. He stopped eating ice cream entirely. He said he didn't become a card-carrying vegetarian, but he came pretty close. And he cut sugar out of his diet. And what happened was he reversed his diabetes. He didn't need insulin anymore. He didn't need diabetic pills anymore. There was no longer talk of any kind of amputation. His circulation improved tremendously. And he lived 20 more healthy years, whereas the doctors were telling him at the time that he had at best only a few to live, and they weren't going to be very healthy or happy. So in my own family, I have seen how remarkable results you can get from shifting to a whole foods, plant-strong diet to treat even advanced diabetes.
Oh, I did not know that story. That's so wonderful. Yeah, I mean, a similar story in my own family is what led me to do the work that I do. My grandmother was cured of her end-stage heart disease with this kind of healthy diet. It's remarkable how, you know, look, all the science in the world, right? There could be this mountain of scientific evidence, but it's often that kind of personal story, that anecdote, that, you know, the one doctor that has one patient who, you know, read Diet for New America or watched Forks Over Knives or read the China study and then gets remarkably healthy, teaches the doctor who then spreads it on to all their patients. And, you know, I go to that doctor and I say, wait a second, for years I've been showing this study after study that this works, but somehow those numbers just don't translate, don't have that kind of emotional impact of seeing somebody in your own life undergo this kind of transformation.
You know, a lot of diabetics eventually develop neuropathy, which is damage to their nerves. It's common in diabetics. My father had it. And it can be very painful. And the pain is uniquely resistant to a lot of our conventional treatments. So doctors will resort to opiates and steroids and even antidepressants to try to ease their patients' suffering. But you write of a study, a little known study, I hadn't heard of it before, titled Regression of Diabetic Neuropathy with the Total Vegetarian Diet, that achieved results that I found just stunning. Michael, can you tell us about that study and why it's important?
Okay, yeah. And again, when was this study published? It was published forever ago. Like, it's just amazing. This is one of the most, frustrating conditions for doctors to treat, not to mention the patients, because it can be painful. And for anyone who's not known anyone in chronic pain, it can just be devastating for someone's life. So what these researchers did, they took 21 diabetics who've been suffering from this kind of painful neuropathy for, you know, up to 10 years, and they just placed them on a healthy diet, right? So after years and years of suffering, 17 out of the 21 patients reported they felt complete relief within days. Within days. And look, the side effects were all good. They lost an average of 10 pounds. Their sugar levels dropped. Insulin needs dropped in half. And five of the patients, not only was their painful neuropathy cured, so was apparently their diabetes, had been diabetic for up to 20 years, then off all blood sugar drugs in less than a month. Their cholesterol, everything, you know, high blood pressure dropped, et cetera, et cetera. Just benefit on top of benefit, whereas often with kind of the, you know, conventional kind of pills and procedures approach of modern medicine, the reverse happens, where you get like a bad effect of one of the drugs, you have to add another drug to combat the side effect of the first drug, and that leads to a further complication. So instead of this piling up of kind of bad things, you have this piling up of good, a positive benefits. So here we have this condition that basically can be untouched. There's nothing that kind of modern medicine can do for these people. And then all they needed, so for years, pain day after day. And why have they been suffering for year after year? Because no one told them about a plant-based diet. Suffering for years, then off, and then complete relief of pain in as few as 4 days. For decades, some of them were 4 days away from relief had someone just told them about the power of a healthy diet.
It is amazing, actually, that we have evidence like this, and still patients are suffering, and doctors either don't know about this evidence, that's my guess in most cases, or they think the patients won't be receptive to it. But in either case, the patient doesn't learn of what can be done easily. and to relieve this kind of pain. It's almost malpractice to not tell patients what can be done.
Yeah, they simply don't know. I think you're right. In most cases, they don't know. And when they do know, so for example, the one kind of bit of evidence in this field that's really, I think, got out to more of the mainstream has been Dr. Dean Ornish's landmark lifestyle heart trial published in 1990, showing that our number one killer, both men and women, could be reversed with a healthy enough diet and lifestyle. And that, you know, thanks to President Clinton and others, kind of high-profile folks that have brought Ornish's work to the attention of the masses. When I talk to kind of conventional, when I give grand rounds in hospitals and talk to doctors, they'll hear that work. I say, wait a second. Okay, here we go. We have the cure for our number one killer, right? You know about it. Why aren't you telling every single one of your heart patients to do this? And what they come back to me is what you kind of, alluded to, was this kind of patronizing attitude that they don't think their patients would do it. They're like, look, I can't get my patients even to stop smoking. You think they're going to upend their whole diet? They're just not going to do it. And so they make the decision for the patients by saying, look, I know you're not going to do it, so I'm not even going to bring it up, not that I have much time with my patients anyway, and they just don't want to get into it. And so, but this patronizing attitude, look, there are patients who won't do it. Absolutely. Look, it's your body, your choice. You want to smoke cigarettes, go bungee jumping. It's totally up to you. But you can't make that choice without the information. And that's all I would ever ask, is that people are just, informed about their options. Yes, you can go down this route. We've got lots of drugs we can do, and if this happens, we can do it. Or, okay, you can treat the cause. Don't have to be on drugs every day for the rest of your life, risking the side effects and the expense and the lack of efficacy.
You mentioned the work of Dr. Dean Ornish, who is a speaker also in this summit, and a close friend of yours and mine and colleague. From his work, the work of Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and others, we have, as you mentioned, very strong, compelling evidence that a plant-strong whole foods diet can reliably prevent and reverse heart disease. What I want to ask you, Michael, is do we have evidence that the dietary interventions that have been shown to be so effective in preventing and treating cardiovascular disease can also be effective for the prevention of Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia?
Well, what we've been learning in recent years is the vascular component to Alzheimer's and age-related cognitive decline in general. So instead of thinking it as strictly a neurological disease, a nerve disease, a brain disease, we're now realizing that these same vascular risk factors like high blood cholesterol, high blood pressure, also contribute not only to problems in our heart, but problems in our brain as well. Atherosclerosis, this hardening of the arteries, this clogging up of our arteries, is a systemic disease. So yes, it can clog up our heart, cause a heart attack. It can also completely shut off the blood flow to parts of our brain, causing a stroke. But just the narrowing of arteries, of our cerebral arteries, the arteries that deliver oxygen to our brain, when they're narrowed by atherosclerosis, and our body has problems getting rid of toxic waste byproducts of metabolism and getting enough fuel and oxygen when necessary, is contributing to Alzheimer's disease. So, for example, if you take Alzheimer's victims at autopsy, you can see that the arteries in their brains are much more clogged than the arteries of control brain. So people that died at similar age and similar state but didn't have Alzheimer's, and particularly the arteries to particular parts of the brain called the hippocampus that control memory are particularly clogged in Alzheimer's patients. So this idea started forming that maybe this may be playing a key role in Alzheimer's. Of course, you don't know until you put it to the test. And so finally, a study was put together. Hundreds of Alzheimer's patients were randomized in two groups, half continued with the regular care. The other half, we controlled some of these vascular risk factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and were able to significantly slow down the disease progress in that half, and those randomized to the intervention group. So this is for the first time showing that indeed this is a causal relationship. It wasn't just a coincidence that Alzheimer's brains happen to have more cholesterol-laden plaque in their arteries. There does seem to be this causal connection. But note, they didn't stop the disease. They didn't reverse the disease. They slowed the progression. There is no known cure for Alzheimer's disease, and the best we have in terms of medications can just control some of the symptoms, not the underlying disease process. For the first time, we may be actually altering the underlying disease process, but we're still not stopping this disease. And so that's why prevention is critical. And so keeping the arteries in our brains open and blood flowing may be a key factor in preventing Alzheimer's in the first place. And so that's why the latest review on dietary approaches to prevent Alzheimer's suggests the two most important things we can do is cut down our intake of saturated and trans fats, particularly in meat, dairy, and junk food, and increase our intake of whole plant foods like fruits, vegetables, legumes, whole grains. And this is based on studies going back decades now to the original Seventh-day Adventist study that showed that those who eat meat, red meat, white meat, didn't matter, between about 2 to 3 times more likely to become demented later in life than those who ate no meat at all. And the longer people were eating more plant-based, the lower their risk of developing dementia went down.
Just in the last month, I've seen several new studies that show that berries and the anthocyanins they contain help reduce risks of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease and neurodegeneration. And I'm also thinking about the Harvard Nurses Health Study that famously tracked the cognitive function of more than 16,000 women for many years. Michael, did they find a correlation there between the consumption of berries and rates of cognitive decline?
They did. Really exciting stuff. So, I mean, berries are the healthiest fruits, just like greens are the healthiest vegetables. I encourage people to eat both berries and greens every day. What Harvard researchers found that those women who consumed at least one serving of blueberries and 2 servings of strawberries each week had slower rates of cognitive decline by as much as 2.5 years compared to those that didn't regularly eat berries. So these results suggest that simply eating a handful of berries every day or even every other day, one easy and delicious dietary tweak may slow your brain's aging by more than 2 years. Other studies have shown, for example, the American Cancer Society funded a study of nearly 100,000 men and women, found that those who ate the most berries also had appeared significantly less likely to die from cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes. So wait a second. It tastes great and you get to live longer. That's what plant-strong eating is all about.
It sounds delicious. Most people love berries. I do. And I'm seeing that all the time where researchers are finding new health benefits provided by berries. And one of the reasons is that berries contain bioactive natural pigments called anthocyanins. And these are the water-soluble plant pigments that give berries their wide range of beautiful colors. I'm thinking about the deep blues of blueberries and the reds of raspberries and strawberries and the dark purples of loganberries and mulberries and blackberries.
You're making me hungry.
It's a rainbow. Michael, can you tell us why anthocyanins are such powerful agents for the prevention of many diseases and for the promotion of optimum health?
Well, they appear to localize in certain parts of the brain. So they act as antioxidants. It's no coincidence. The same chemical property that gives these plant pigments those brilliant colors is actually that same kind of electron capturing chemical structure that gives them antioxidant power. And these pigments localize to nervous tissue, to our brain, to the backs of our eyes, to our retinas. Same thing with the yellow pigments, the lutein zeaxanthin found in dark green leafy vegetables, they end up in our eyes. You eat them, and your body seems to know exactly where to put them. Just like if you eat men eat lycopene, that red pigment in tomatoes, it builds up in your prostate gland where it appears to have beneficial effects. And how does your body know to put the red pigments in the prostate and the yellow pigments in the back of your eye to cut out some of the blue rays that contribute to age-related macular degeneration, et cetera. I'm constantly amazed by how well your body knows where to put all the magical ingredients in our foods. But if we don't put them in our mouth, then they're not going to end up anywhere. And so that's why it's critical we eat some of these healthiest foods. So, you know, when you hear, you know, eat fruits and vegetables, you know, that's okay, but there are healthier and less healthy options. And so if you have a choice, if you're privileged enough to have the choice to add, you know, blueberries to your oatmeal rather than bananas, that's a healthier choice. If you have an option to add, you know, sweet potatoes to a dish as opposed to celery or something, add the sweet potatoes. We're looking for these plant pigments, eating the rainbow. You can see with your own eyes these health, these plant pigments with the health benefits. So choose the blackest blackberry, the reddest strawberry, because the plant pigments themselves are the antioxidant, anti-aging, cancer fighting molecules.
When you mentioned lutein and zeaxanthin and their effect on our eyes, I was thinking about how our around the clock use of phones and tablets and computers today is exposing our eyes to an unnaturally high amount of what is called blue light, which research has shown, you mentioned it briefly, can be damaging to the retina and to other parts of the eye as well. Excessive exposure to blue light is associated with increased risk of macular degeneration, which is the leading cause of blindness in older people. Now, we know that there are certain nutrients, including lutein and zeaxanthin and mesozeaxanthin, that have been shown to have powerful effects in preventing macular degeneration and other eye disorders. What I want to ask you, Michael, is, are there particular foods, as well as berries, that people should include in their diet if they want to protect their eyesight from computer screen emissions?
Yeah, greens and berries. So greens have those yellow pigments. Berries have those anthocyanin, those more red purple type pigments that again go right to where we need them and been associated with significant improvements. What's called the video display terminal work induced transient refractive alteration, which is kind of doctor speak for kind of eye strain that comes along with looking at computer screens all day beyond just the blue light issue. One thing you can do, particularly at night when you don't want all that kind of circadian rhythm altering light in your face, is either stop using screens when it starts getting dark outside, or there's actually software, free software, that you can get that basically yellows your screen, takes out the blue light from your monitor as it gets darker in your area. I know the software for Mac is called Flux. It's a free download, and it kind of magically yellows your screen as you get older and kind of reminds you it's getting late, you should probably go to sleep. Sleep's important too. And I'm sure there are similar types of software for other platforms.
We've been talking a lot about berries and anthocyanin and antioxidants. The research on antioxidants and the antioxidant power of foods is very impressive. The research on antioxidant supplements is not. And yet there are those who are promoting anthocyanin supplements, and they're saying that even if Americans increase their consumption of berries, there will be very few who will be able to do it consistently enough to substantially impact healthy aging. So, Michael, have you seen evidence one way or the other on anthocyanin supplements?
You know, this happens so often that you can almost kind of predict the results of the study before even reading it. It's kind of a fun game you can play. In terms of a whole food versus this kind of reductionist approach of just finding the kind of target magic bullet ingredient within these foods. And so, you know, the kind of classic study on this was the finding that high beta carotene levels in people's blood was associated with significantly lower risk of cancer, for example. And so the supplement industry, which is typically the drug industry, I mean, some of our biggest supplement manufacturers are just the wings of the big pharma because they're just so profitable. So they say, hey, well, let's just give people beta-carotene supplements. And so they took a whole bunch of smokers at high risk for lung cancer, split them up into two groups. Half got beta-carotene supplements, the other half didn't. And not only was there no protective effect, those that taking beta-carotene actually had a higher cancer rate. And the thinking is that, well, all this excess beta-carotene in their gut kind of blocked up, kind of saturated all the little carotenoid receptors in your intestines. So when you ate a tomato, which had an even more powerful antioxidant like lycopene, the red pigment, you just kind of went through your body and you just flushed it out because all your receptors were tied up with these artificially high doses of beta-carotene you were getting in supplement form. We're still, that's just a proposed mechanism for the increased cancer risk. What we've known all along is to just take a step back and say, well, wait a second, why were high beta-carotene levels associated with lower rates of cancer? Well, how do you get high beta-carotene levels in your blood? Well, where is beta-carotene found? It's found in some of our healthiest foods, sweet potatoes, dark green leafy vegetables. And so basically they were just saying that people who eat lots of healthy foods end up with lower cancer rates. So instead of finding out what this magic, you know, bullet ingredient is, why not just tell people to eat whole plant foods? The reason that we don't is because the drug companies can't make much money off of it. But that's really kind of the safest approach. That's the approach most been found to be useful. And that these supplement studies have been almost universally negative in terms of not having the effects attributed to the whole foods that they're found in nature.
Michael, as we were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, many doctors may be good at treating acute illnesses, but sadly very few know how to prevent chronic disease or how to optimize health with diet. I am so grateful to you because you are such a brilliant exception. By reading your books, listening to you speak, visiting your website, nutritionfacts.org, following your advice, frankly, millions of people are learning which foods to eat and which lifestyle changes to make so that they may live longer and far healthier and happier lives. Michael, it is truly a pleasure and a privilege to speak with you.
My honor.
Well, on behalf of Ocean and myself and everyone involved in the food revolution, I thank you for your outstanding work and for being with us today.
Keep up the good work yourselves.
We've been talking with Dr. Michael Greger, author of How Not to Die, founder of the nonprofit NutritionFacts.org, and director of public health and animal agriculture for the Humane Society of the United States. Dr. Greger, in a world in which nutrition conversations are so often dominated by commercial interests and habits, your voice is bringing sanity and clarity. We want to thank you for your brilliant research, for your passion to help people thrive, and of course, for your critical partnership in the food revolution. This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and you want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 24 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then check this out. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus ebooks, courses, trainings, recipes, and videos. And this empowerment package is available for a huge 50% discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us in the Food Revolution.